Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
Today on the Matt Walsh Show, there's a national effort underway to triple the number of female police officers. This effort has necessitated lowering fitness requirements to an absurd degree. It's even worse than you imagine. I'll show you the video to prove it. Also, the media's latest Trump hoax is perhaps its most blatantly dishonest yet. Democrats in Tennessee are threatening riots because of a bill reversing so-called police reform in the state. A group of eighth grade kids face criminal charges for edgy Snapchat posts. And our daily cancellation, Dylan Mulvaney, just put out a music video. We'll talk about all that and more today on the Matt Walsh Show.
This episode is brought to you by Paycor, the HR and payroll software made for leaders. It's never been harder to recruit, hire, and engage workers. That's why HR leaders and frontline managers depend on Paycor for all things people management, from onboarding and performance reviews to compensation and benefits. Learn more at paycor.com/leaders. That's paycor.com/leaders.
4 years ago, the city of Memphis decided to double down on a strategy of affirmative action policing that they had been practicing for decades. Officially, the city's theory was that black police officers are less likely to mistreat suspects and more likely to do a better job as compared to white officers. Now, there was never any data to support that theory, obviously. If anything, there was a lot of data to suggest the exact opposite. Indeed, Memphis had long been one of the most dangerous cities in the country, despite all the diverse hiring they were doing. But in 2020, Memphis went for it anyway, and they reduced their hiring standards even further to attract more black police recruits, and it worked. As expected, more black people did sign up to become Memphis police officers, and the police department became more quote-unquote diverse. But the result of this grand experiment, as you might remember, wasn't exactly what was advertised. Instead of racial harmony and a utopia where civil liberties were sacrosanct, the residents of Memphis were treated to one of the most brutal police beatings ever recorded on camera. Several black police officers, including officers hired after Memphis implemented its new affirmative action program, took turns pummeling a black man by the name of Tyree Nichols. He died, and the officers were charged with murder. Their specialized policing unit, quote-unquote, called Scorpion, was disbanded immediately. Now, after this debacle, the idea of diversifying the police force by lowering standards should have ended forever. It was always a terrible idea, but now everybody can see in brutal, violent detail how terrible it is. Getting rid of merit in police academies is a lot like introducing DEI to medicine or to the aviation industry. It doesn't just lead to inefficiency, it leads to death, and very preventable ones at that. But somehow this lesson has not been learned. Even in the state of Tennessee, just a few hundred miles from where Tyree Nichols was beaten to death, efforts to diversify policing by reducing standards are underway. And this time around, the stated goal is not to have more black men join the police force. Instead, the objective is to get more women recruits. So watch what's happening in the city of Nashville right now.
It's a male-dominated profession, so women are scared to take that step, maybe thinking that they're not able to do it, but you can do it if you have that right mindset.
It's a mindset the Metro Police Department hopes more women will have. Their goal, a 30% female police force. Last year, it was 11%. This year, it's 13%.
And is it even attainable?
I think we're definitely growing. So if we can just keep that momentum going, I believe that it is definitely attainable.
Commander Tiffany Gibson is Metro's first female director of training. She says among the biggest changes they've made to help attract recruits, especially women, No more physical ability tests. Now trainees must pass a physical agility test designed to mirror tasks in the field. They've also added lactation rooms for nursing moms to all 8 precincts. More flexible schedules. That's in addition to their already paid maternity leave and sick time.
What's something the Metro Police Department does not currently offer to female recruits that you think could really be a game changer?
We were trying to get going, possibly help sponsor our own childcare facility, and I think that would be really helpful for you know, females.
Now, before I even get into the elimination of the testing standards, there's at least 2 levels of crazy here, a lot more than 2, but we'll just talk about 2. The first is that they want the police force to be 30% female by the year 2030. These are 2 completely arbitrary numbers that no one ever attempts to explain or justify. Nashville is a majority female city, so why don't they shoot for a majority female police force if they're doing this? I mean, why stop at 30%? And by the way, Nashville isn't an outlier in terms of the number of female cops on the force. Nationally, roughly 12% of police officers are women. Nashville is at 13%. So what's being proposed here is not an effort to correct some sort of statistical abnormality. In fact, it's an effort to create one. And the timeline makes no sense either. Why is the deadline 2030? Why not sooner if this is so urgent? Why not later if none of this really matters? Who knows? But the bigger issue, of course, is that they're dropping the physical ability requirements in order to get more women on the force. And in their place are new agility requirements. And the news report doesn't really explain, you know, what's precisely is the distinction between ability and agility. I would have thought that physical agility falls under the umbrella of physical ability, but apparently not. In that clip, they suggest that the new agility standards will help attract women because they mirror tasks that these women cops will have to do in the field. And read between the lines, and what they're saying is that the agility test is a lot easier than the old test. But they don't go into too much detail about how much easier this new test is. So I looked into it. The old test required recruits to complete sit-ups, a 300-meter sprint, and a 1.5-mile run. Now, even those standards were not all that demanding. If anything, in a sane world, we'd be talking about raising those standards. But instead, we're going the opposite direction. The new test only requires recruits to run for 500 yards rather than a mile and a half, plus 99 yards around some cones. There's also a couple of wall climbing tests, including a chain link fence climb and a solid wall climb. Now, when you hear some of that, to be fair, it might sound somewhat challenging, you know, a wall climb, a fence climb. And if you're not in very good shape anyway, maybe some of that could be, there could be a challenge to that. After all, climbing fences and walls, you know, it's not something most people do on a given day. Unfortunately, the Metro Nashville Police Department has uploaded footage of what these tests look like in practice. So here they are. Here is the chain link fence test, followed by the solid wall test, which are part of these new agility standards. And I want you to see how much agility is really on display in this example that the police department provides. Watch.
This is the chain link fence climb. For this test, you're to run up to the fence, scale the fence, and continue running to the finish line. The test may be administered twice with at least a 2-minute rest period between administrations. Your fastest time will be used as your score. Solid wall climb. For this test, you're to run up to the wall, scale the wall, and continue running to the finish line. This test may be administered twice with at least 2 minutes rest period between administrations. Your fastest time will be used as your score.
Okay. Good thing you get the 2-minute rest in between those two extremely physically demanding tasks. So when you hear chain link fence climb and wall climb, your mind immediately conjures images of a tall fence and like a large wall, at least one taller than a human being that you have to climb. You know, because that when you think of climbing, you think like it's bigger than me. I have to get over it. What they don't tell you is that the wall and fence are like 3.5 feet high. You don't have to climb them so much as sort of skip over them. It's effectively a test to make sure you're not in a wheelchair. And then there's no big chase after you've jumped over the fence. There's no secondary fence you have to scale. That would just be ridiculous. As you saw, the female crew just has to trot ahead. You know, it's like a light jog for a few feet and the test is over. And just in case she somehow slipped and fell over and knocked herself unconscious while scaling this miniature fence, there's good news. She can take the test twice with a 2-minute breather in between attempts. Now, I'm not exaggerating when I say that this is a physical fitness test that my four-year-old daughter could easily pass. It's like a parody of a physical fitness test. And there's more to it also. There's also a section where the recruits have to jog 99 yards around some cones in a parking lot. Pretty grueling stuff. Watch this.
99-yard agility run. This test simulates a short-distance foot pursuit that could occur in a parking lot. This test requires you to make frequent changes of directions while running as fast as possible. You will have to step over several obstacles and clear a small obstacle while continue running. This test may be administered twice, if desired, with a 2-minute rest period between tests.
What criminals are these people catching? We better hope that the only people committing crimes in Nashville are 600 pounds and have no legs. But even then, they could probably roll away fast enough to escape. I mean, did you see how far apart the cones were? It honestly looks like they set up the course for a driving test, but didn't move the cones back together before the running test started. What you just saw there, it honestly looks like, and I'm watching this and I'm trying to think, what does that remind me of? It looks like an obstacle course you set up for third graders at recess. The kind of obstacle course that, like, if you set that up for my 10-year-olds, they'd look at that and say, that's too boring. I don't want to do that. Pathetic doesn't even begin to describe this. You have just witnessed the maximum level of difficulty that recruits will now encounter in police academies in Nashville. Now, as recently as 2005, things were very different. As WPLN in Nashville reports, applicants in 2005 had to run up and down a flight of stairs. They had to crawl under obstacles. They had to fire a revolver 6 times after they were exhausted. They also had to climb a 6-foot wall, so like at least twice as tall as what they have to climb now. As one sergeant put it, quote, people couldn't get over the wall. So there are people going home and crying. I'll never forget that. Crying and distraught over they couldn't get over the wall. Now they don't have their chance. Well, there won't be any more crying with the new wall. Or maybe there will be. I don't know. I also thought that when I'm watching that test. Can you imagine the people who don't pass the current test? Because I guarantee that's still not 100% graduation rate. There are people who can't even do that. But there's not going to be nearly as much crying. I think we can be sure of that. As WPLN reports, quote, the extreme stunts that police would rarely encounter in real life are gone, especially the ones that often weeded people out. Yeah, you wouldn't want to weed people out in a physical fitness test. I mean, silly me. I thought that was like the whole point of a physical fitness test. Apparently not. These days, the exercises are meant to ensure everyone has a fair chance at getting into the academy. Again, I'm a broken record, but that is the exact opposite of what a physical fitness test is supposed to do. It's not supposed to give everybody a chance. It's supposed to ensure that only the most fit are the ones who get through. And specifically, the outlet notes, the goal is to maximize the number of women and people of color who can pass the training. Now, before I go into what an absurd and dangerous idea this is, it's important to point out that it's not limited to Nashville, of course. All over the country, police departments are understaffed, and they're turning to women recruits and lowering their standards to fix the problem. This is something called the 30 by 30 initiative. The objective is to increase the number of women in recruitment classes by 30% by 2030. Again, it's all completely arbitrary, but more than 200 law enforcement agencies have signed on to this pledge, including the U.S. Marshals Service and the New York City Police Department. Supposedly, according to the 30 by 30 initiative, women are better cops because they, quote, use less force and less excessive force, and they're named in fewer complaints and lawsuits, and they're perceived by communities as being more honest and compassionate. Apparently, perception is what's important here. You know, no word on whether these women cops are actually more honest or compassionate. Of course, those other two statistics are very likely to be true, if only because there are far fewer female police officers than there are male police officers. It's easy to be named in fewer lawsuits and use force less when you make up just 10% of the police department. But even if those numbers are adjusted on a per capita basis, which they don't appear to be, it really doesn't tell us much, other than that women police officers simply don't get involved as much in making arrests. You're not going to have a use of force complaint if you're biologically incapable of using a significant amount of force in the first place. Now, everybody knows that's true, obviously, even though they get extremely angry when it's pointed out. Female police officers, almost without exception, are much less capable of doing their jobs effectively. That's why they have to lower the standards. There's any number of clips I could use to demonstrate this point, but here are three. And in the first one, the woman police officer leaves her car in gear and it nearly runs her over as she barks orders at some suspects. In the second clip, a female police officer is overpowered one-on-one by a male suspect. And in a third clip, the woman police officer sits by and does nothing as a suspect charges her partner. Let's watch.
Right now. Get on your knees right now.
Damn. What the f***? Girl, I thought you had a partner.
Get on your knees. I'm on your knees. Stay on your knees. Damn, you need to get up and get on your knees.
Damn, I wish you would have hit my car.
Yeah, it's another person chasing another person. Run away to the end. There's two people there. Brody Peter. Something happened. She lost her control, Brody. Peter, run, please.
Drop the knife, miss. Casey, taser. Stop it, you're gonna get shot.
Okay, so there's just three, and like I said, we could sit here for hours watching videos of female cops who are, in water way above their heads. And you could accuse me of cherry picking if you want, but really it's just basic biology and human evolution. And by the way, we could again sit here for hours with videos like this. Have you ever seen a video of a singular female cop taking down a male suspect and detaining him as he resists? I'm not saying it's never happened. I mean, just it would stand to reason statistically that it has happened before. I've never seen that. Have you? I mean, it's like almost absurd that you can't even imagine it. You can't even imagine seeing that. It's an absurd thought. Because women are not as physically capable in general of handling requirements of police work as well as men can handle them. That doesn't mean that all female police officers are terrible. It doesn't mean every male cop is better than every female cop. But in aggregate, it means women aren't as good at the job because of all the physical demands that the job entails. But police departments are having to pretend otherwise because they've demonized all the male cops. And in fact, they're still demonizing these cops even after they're mostly gone. Here's how the Washington Post puts it, quote, amid new standards of accountability and awakened mistrust in the communities, especially after the reckoning that followed George Floyd's 2020 death under the knee of a Minneapolis policeman, there has been an exodus of seasoned police officers. In other words, all these cops aren't leaving because left-wing governments slashed their budgets or allowed mobs to torch their police stations or called them racist every day for 4 years. No, these cops are fleeing because they don't want to be held accountable, apparently. That's why recruiting numbers are down by 90% in some major cities. Unless that messaging changes, until a major political party and all the corporate media stop attacking police officers, the problem will continue to get worse. I mean, even if somehow magically a bunch of women appear out of nowhere, eager to become cops, the problem still won't be solved. Sure, there won't be manpower issues anymore, but law enforcement agencies that go out of their way to recruit women don't tend to be terribly successful. Take the FBI, for example. They've had reduced physical fitness standards for women for years. A decade ago, a male special agent failed the fitness test by one push-up, and he sued because women applicants only have to complete half that number of push-ups. The result? Well, a federal appeals court upheld the lax standards for women, even though they make no sense whatsoever. And what's been the result, practically speaking? Has the FBI transformed into a highly functional law enforcement agency over the past decade? Of course not. They send SWAT teams after protesters at abortion clinics and elderly Trump supporters who write mean things on the internet. Remember the elderly man in Utah who threatened Joe Biden on Facebook? This is the guy the FBI could have arrested at the supermarket, but instead they shot him in front of his home at the crack of dawn. The head of the field office that handled that arrest is a woman specializing in counterterrorism. And she has all sorts of news articles written about what a path-breaking success story she is. The fact that her office deliberately chose to provoke and gun down an elderly man is beside the point. She's a woman. Now, the point of this is not to demonize women, of course. The point is that it's always been a bad idea to deliberately and artificially feminize any institution. With policing, it's particularly suicidal. If anything, a sane society would be having a conversation about how to decrease the number of women cops, which is to say, we'd be having a conversation about how to get more physically fit men involved in policing. We wouldn't be lowering standards and then throwing women into dangerous situations they're not prepared for. That's what a society does if it despises women and despises itself. And unfortunately, as you may have noticed by now, that's exactly the kind of society we have. Now let's get to our five headlines. Balance of Nature Fruits and Veggies is the most convenient way to get whole fruits and vegetables daily. They use an advanced cold vacuum process that encapsulates fruits and vegetables into whole food supplements without sacrificing their natural antioxidants. The capsules are completely void of additives, fillers, extracts, synthetics, pesticides, or added sugar. The only thing in Balance of Nature's fruits and veggie capsules are fruits and veggies. Imagine trying to eat 31 different fruits and vegetables every day. That sounds miserable and time-consuming. It's just not possible to do. With Balance of Nature, there's never been an easier way to ensure that you get your daily dose of fruits and vegetables. Go to balanceofnature.com and use promo code Walsh to get 35% off your first set of fruits and veggies and an additional $10 off every additional set you buy. That's balanceofnature.com, promo code Walsh. Daily Wire reports legacy media outlets in the Biden-Harris campaign are facing blowback for picking up on former President Donald Trump predicting a bloodbath if he does not win a second term in 2024, while concealing that he was talking about the auto industry. Contextless headlines arose from Trump's speech in Ohio on Saturday, less than a week after he surpassed the requisite threshold of delegates to secure the GOP presidential nomination, paving the way to a 2020 rematch against President Joe Biden in the general election. The media coverage that ensued suggested that Trump was making a far more foreboding and potentially violent prediction for the country if he were to be defeated in November. Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses the election, NBC News headline blared. In Ohio campaign rally, Trump says there will be a bloodbath if he loses November election, said another from CBS News. A third from Rolling Stone trumpeted, quote, Trump says there will be a bloodbath and elections will end if he isn't reelected. The list goes on. Politico bore a similar headline and noted in its report, quote, while it was unclear what the former president meant exactly, the remarks came as Trump was complaining about the automobile industry. And then Biden's campaign released a statement about it as well. So, you know, the corporate media has been in a tizzy over this the past couple of days, freaking out over the bloodbath predicted by Trump if he isn't elected. Obviously, they're construing this as some kind of threat. Trump was threatening a violent revolt, I guess, if he's not elected. That's what all the media headlines are claiming. And then you go and watch the full clip in context, and you see that, of course, as noted in the Daily Wire report, that's not what he was saying at all. Let's watch.
You know, Mexico has taken over a period of 30 years, 34% of the automobile manufacturing business in our country. Think of it, went to Mexico. China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and they think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal. Those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. A friend of mine, all he does is build car manufacturing plants. He's the biggest in the world.
Okay, so a bloodbath for the car manufacturing industry. As is clear in the context, there's no way to misconstrue it, honestly. And, you know, in that context, it makes a lot more sense. Needless to say, this was not a comment that was innocently misconstrued or misunderstood. This was a deliberate propaganda campaign by the corporate press, obviously. And it shows, again, the nature of fake news. This is a perfect example of how fake news works. They're not lying about what he said specifically in that he did make the bloodbath comment. So when they put that in quotes, like, he did say that. And it's also true to say that he President Trump predicted a bloodbath if he's not reelected. That's true. That alone is true. But obviously, when you frame it that way, and you have that statement alone without the context, then it leads people to completely false conclusions that you are intentionally directing them towards. And that's what they do. That's how fake news works. So when you hear fake news, you kind of think, okay, well, they're just inventing things, you know, just a quote that he never even said. And they do that also, you know, quite frequently. But generally, especially if they have anonymous sources claim President Trump said this and that. But most of the time, if they put it in quotes, he did say it. But they're isolating it. They're ripping it from its context. And they are heavily implying that that something sinister was said. And really, just by reporting on it in the first place, that alone makes it seem sinister. Because in reality, the comment isn't even newsworthy. There's nothing newsworthy about the fact that he said that. What he's saying is that the economy will be in worse shape if he's not elected, which, like, that's what every... Now, in this case, it happens to be true, but that's what every single presidential candidate in the history of the country has said. But this is the game. And it's kind of mind-boggling in a certain way that the media is doing this again. You know, if you're trying to create sympathy for Donald Trump, if you're trying to move people to his side, I don't know what you'd be doing differently. This is exactly what you would do. And the media is still operating in this fantasy land. They're operating in this bubble where it's like they believe they have a monopoly over the narrative, but they don't anymore because things like Twitter exist. You know, they cannot monopolize the conversation the way that they used to. So now, you know, they used to be able to get a false narrative going, and it would kind of cycle around for a while before the truth gets out. But now they start with a false narrative, and immediately the truth is also being spread, and so they're competing with that, and they're quite easily exposed as the propagandists they are. But that, of course, hasn't stopped them. All right, speaking of policing in Tennessee, here's something on the good news side of things. A piece of legislation will soon undo police reform, quote unquote, that was passed in certain cities in the state, namely Memphis. Here's the report from WPLN. Legislation designed to undo police traffic stop reform in Memphis is heading to Governor Bill Lee's desk. Specifically, the bill prevents local governments from adopting any policy that prohibits or limits law enforcement from carrying out their duties. Memphis City Council voted for the ordinance unanimously in response to police fatally beating Tyree Nichols at a traffic stop last year. It included outlawing so-called pretextual traffic stops for minor infractions like a broken taillight. Nichols' parents, Rodney and Rovon Wells, spoke with the House and state sponsors, both Republicans, but couldn't find a compromise. Rovon believes it's wrong for the state to reverse something so strongly supported by Memphians. Wells said, quote, "We had people work very hard to pass that ordinance. Just because you don't agree with the ordinance doesn't mean that you just come to Nashville and you put a bill together and say, oh, we're going to overturn what you did. That's not how you handle business, as far as I'm concerned." Well, that is how you handle business, actually. And this is a good piece of legislation, obviously. Anytime you're reversing police reform, it's a good thing. Now, it's not to say that police reform as a concept definitionally is bad. There are aspects of policing in its current form that should be reformed. We just talked about one. How about a police reform where we're raising the physical standards once again? That would be a reform. It would be a good thing to do. But that's never what reform means these days. Reform these days always means deform. Police reform is police deform. So in practice, police reform should always be resisted or reversed where it's already happened. And especially in this case, there was never any need for any change to any law after the Tyree Nichols incident. He was brutally assaulted, you know, and beaten by these thug cops. What they did was already illegal. They were already breaking the law. They were already arrested and charged as they should be. So what do you need? What does the law accomplish? They were already breaking 10 different laws. and we're charged for it. You don't need new laws to cover the stuff that's already covered by the old laws. Now, if there was a law that somehow explicitly permitted cops to beat people to death for no reason, then yeah, that's a law that should be changed. But the law doesn't allow that. It doesn't now. It didn't back then. There's no reason for the reform, obviously, which means that the reform must be doing something other than what they claim it's doing. Now, that hasn't stopped Democrats in the state from panicking over this change, as you would expect. I'm going to play two clips for you here to give you a taste of how our Democrat representatives in the state of Tennessee are responding to this development. The first is from State Senator London Lamar, and here's what she has to say.
What we see here is drunk on power. I don't like that you take this position on this bill, so I'm going to silence you. That's a form of slavery. I feel like a slave sometime in this building. I'm over it. And all of the members standing here are over it. At what point are we going to truly be a Democratic body, respect the fact that every single one of us are represented by the same amount of people in their districts, and we all deserve the same voice and the same level of respect, regardless if we agree or not. I am tired of the Republican Party expecting us as minorities to do what they want to do, but treat us disrespectfully. Nah, we're not doing that no more. As we at this time of session wearing gloves off. And I support any of my members have the right to defend themselves, to not accept disrespect, and we shouldn't expect disrespect from the other side of the aisle. I just wanted to get it off my chest. Y'all heard it. You can repeat it. But it has to be said. Senator Oliver.
Okay, a form of slavery. She feels like a slave sometimes in that building. So I guess what you're saying then is that slavery wasn't that bad? Is that what you're trying to say? I mean, if feeling like a slave means simply not getting your way about something, then what you are saying, what you are claiming, is that slavery wasn't a big deal. It wasn't too bad. That's the claim you're making. You're saying it was a minor inconvenience because that's what you suffered. You suffered a minor inconvenience, and you're saying that that was like slavery. That's the consequence of comparing everything to slavery all the time. It's the consequence of living in a country run by not just grifters and propagandists, but incredibly stupid ones. People who, honest to God, could not even provide you a list of like five historical events. And I mean that sincerely. If you were to take London Lamar, the woman we just saw, and you were to ask her to just write a list of five historical events that occurred more than 30 years ago, you don't have to say anything about them. Just list them. She wouldn't be able to do it. Like, you and I both know she would not be able to do it. She could give you slavery and probably the Holocaust. And those are the two things. That's pretty much it. And that's a lot of people in this country, including a lot of people running this country, which is why every bad thing, everything we don't like, is immediately compared to one of those two things, slavery or the Holocaust. Because those are the only two things that people know happened in the world. And there's more where that came from. Here's Democrat State Senator Charlene Oliver, I think is her name, and she had a very similar response. Let's listen.
It is a slap in the face, and you might as well stomp on the grave of Tyre Nichols for bringing this bill. Yes, we are emotionally charged. Why? Because it's personal for us. Taylor made this personal the minute he introduced this legislation to target one family and one life that was lost. So yeah, we gonna fight. Dr. King said the riots are the language of the unheard. You ain't saying nothing yet. If you keep silencing us like this, what do you think our district's gonna do? We have had it up here, gloves off. Like we gonna fight like hell. You don't expect us to respond when you gaslight us every single day with these bills? There's a bill to get rid of the Tennessee Human Rights Commission that they're going to bring, to abolish it, rooted in the Civil Rights Act, to make sure that we have protections for folks that look like Tyre Nichols. Don't tell me this stuff ain't racist. Don't tell me it's not. It is rooted in racism. This was a Jim Crow bill that Taylor brought, and all his Confederates voted for it today.
Oh, we got to throw that in. Okay, so we get Jim Crow and the Confederacy. So they might make it to five. Slavery, Jim Crow, the Civil War, that's kind of like the same thing. So I don't think you can count that as two different things. So they give you slavery, Jim Crow, and I'm assuming they know about the Holocaust. So those three things is all they can do. And so, which is why everything in history is, everything that happens right now is compared to one of those three things. Now, if I were to ask, who's that? Charlene Oliver. If I were to ask her about Jim Crow, like, what was that? When did that happen? Can you tell me a little bit about it? She wouldn't be able to. Not even close. But this is, it's just like Jim Crow. It's like slavery. And as a bonus, she explicitly threatens violence. She threatens riots explicitly. This is a state senator, elected representative, explicitly threatening riots because she didn't get what she wants. So Trump was accused of threatening a bloodbath, a physical bloodbath, even though he obviously didn't. This woman actually did. I mean, can you imagine if Trump had said exactly that? What she just said? What if Trump had said, if I'm not elected, they say riots are the language of the unheard. What do you expect us to do? They would arrest him again. They would arrest him for the 10th time and charge him with another crime if he said that. But for this woman, it's perfectly okay. Which of course is the double standard we're used to. Here's a story out of Massachusetts. Eighth graders facing criminal charges for bullying on social media. Let's watch the report.
This is a universal issue that we must face as one unified community.
Developing news now from Western Mass, a group of eighth graders facing criminal charges for allegedly setting up a mock slave auction on Snapchat. Boston 25 News reporter John Monahan live not far from the school. And John, the DA calls this behavior vile.
That's right, he did, Vanessa. And he also says the fact this happened in a middle school is very unsettling. We also spoke to the mother of one of the victims here, and she tells us this alleged incident of a mock slave auction is not the only time her daughter has faced an incident of racial bullying. Six classmates, eighth graders in Southwick, will face criminal charges for their alleged role in a mock slave auction, according to the Hampton County DA.
Several students uttered hateful and racist comments, including notions of violence toward people of color, racial slurs, derogatory pictures and videos, and a mock slave auction directed at two juveniles.
The mother of one of the students targeted, who spoke out when allegations first came to light, applauded the DA for filing charges. In a statement, she says in part, "Your dedication to upholding justice in our community is commendable and provides a glimmer of hope amidst the darkness of this traumatic incident." The incident took place on Snapchat among several eighth grade students on February 8th and 9th. It was reported to school officials on February 9th and an investigation began.
Which aims to hold accountable those who committed provable criminal acts.
So criminal charges for eighth graders, we're talking about 13-year-old kids here, and that's just pure madness, pure madness. Criminal charges for edgy Snapchat posts by eighth graders is, now, were the posts offensive? I haven't seen them. As far as I know, they haven't been made public. Maybe they have been. I haven't seen them. I don't need to see them. Were they offensive? Sure. Of course, very offensive. A mock slave auction. That's very offensive. Targeting, you know, individual people, even more offensive and wrong. Does that mean that it rises to the level of the district attorney getting involved and filing criminal charges against 13-year-old kids? Kids in middle school? No, of course not. Like, we should have ways of handling very bad behavior from kids that doesn't involve getting the district attorney, you know, on the case. And this is how it goes now, right? We criminalize adolescent mischief while at the same time taking actual crimes, actual violent crimes by adults, and treating it like it's adolescent mischief. So we go easy on criminals, actual criminals, violent people who are, you know, direct threats to their communities, while turning kids who are not criminals into criminals. It's all completely backwards. It's upside down, insane. And, you know, like I often say with these sorts of cases, I would find it, now, I'm against criminalizing offensive comments and jokes made by kids under any circumstance, and we all should be. Doesn't mean I'm against punishing kids who engage in this kind of behavior. Of course, they should be punished. But criminalizing it, making it a criminal matter, I'm against that. However, it would be somewhat less outrageous to me if we lived in a society where law and order was emphasized like to the nth degree. You know, if we lived in the kind of society where there was just no tolerance for illegal behavior, where if you're an actual criminal, we're going to throw the book at you and there's not going to be any mercy. And if you're a violent criminal, you're going away probably forever, if not worse than that, depending on what your penalty, what your infraction was. If we lived in that kind of society, and then some of that was kind of bleeding down even to kids who are posting offensive things on social media, again, it would still be wrong. I'd be against it. But it would be slightly less outrageous. The problem is that this is happening in the context of a society where there's no law and order. You know, where there's almost no emphasis on justice. Where there's almost no, especially punitive justice. Almost no, not just a no emphasis, but a deliberate de-emphasis on those kinds of things. We happen to live in a society where you can commit actual violent crimes against your fellow human beings and be out on the street that same day. And in that context is where we are putting passing down criminal charges on 13-year-old kids for Snapchat posts. That's what makes it all the more outrageous. And by the way, again, without having seen these posts, anyone who is really shocked that 13-year-old boys were joking about slavery or whatever they were doing, anyone truly shocked by that is sheltered in the extreme. This is the kind of thing that 13-year-old boys, like, it's not okay. Again, you should correct the behavior. 13, 14-year-old boys, you know, can tend to do a lot of things that are not okay. They need to have their behavior corrected. It's not really shocking, though. And the reason is that for 13-year-old boys, things are funny if they're extremely offensive. So in the mind of many 13-year-old boys, many 8th grade boys, what they're thinking is like, whatever is the most offensive thing I can do or say is automatically funny. In the adolescent male mind, that's the way it works. Now, as you get a little bit older, you know, there are many contexts where something that is deemed offensive by society can still be funny, but then you as you get older, you mature, hopefully you have moral standards, and also you need there to be things like punchlines and that sort of thing in order for there to be a joke, right? Just simply saying something offensive just for the sake of it isn't necessarily funny, but in the mind of a adolescent kid, that's often the way that it works. Which also means, by the way, the point there, well, there's two points. Number one, all the more reason why you don't criminalize this stuff. You're dealing with kids whose minds are not, their brains are not even close to fully developed. And they're not thinking through the consequences of their actions, not thinking through the consequences. To them, it's like, oh, well, it's funny, so I should do it. They're not thinking through all the consequences of it. But also, the more we try to prohibit sort of wrong think, the more we live in this woke leftist dystopia, the more you're going to have 13 and 14-year-old boys making outrageously offensive jokes because they're looking at society and they're looking at, okay, well, like, what are the things that are totally off limits for me? Well, that's what's funny. So in other words, the more you react this way to this kind of thing, the more of it you're going to get. Which maybe is not a bug, but a feature for these tyrants. You know, because then it gives them the pretext to like try to put more 13-year-old white kids in jail, which is what they want to do. You know, even if you're not all that into sports, sports betting with Bet Online adds a layer of excitement to the game. With March Madness coming up, imagine how you would feel watching your favorite basketball team or athlete compete with the added thrill of having a stake in the outcome. Bet Online is running a March Madness bracket challenge in which the winner will walk away with $50,000. And here's the kicker. Even if your bracket is among the top 1,000 winners, you'll still be a winner and take home some cash. For just $20, you can secure your spot in the challenge. This is a small investment for a chance to win big. Don't miss out. You've got until March 21st to create your bracket. So while you're watching your favorite team, why not spice things up with a friendly wager? You might just find that it takes your love of sports to a whole new level. Go to betonline.ag to place your bets and create a bracket today. Use promo code Walsh for a 50% instant deposit bonus of up to $1,000. That's betonline.ag. Use promo code Walsh. BetOnline. The options are endless. Well, I wouldn't be telling you this unless they made me. So here we go. Today is Michael Knowles' birthday. A reminder, we've had to put up with him for another year. To celebrate it, I was wondering why are we talking about Michael Knowles' birthday in a spot, but here it is. We get to it. To celebrate his birthday, Mayflower cigars are 10% off today. Use code BIRTHDAY at checkout for 10% off your order. Whether you're savoring a quiet moment or sharing laughs with friends, these premium cigars are the perfect companions. Go to mayflowercigars.com. Use code BIRTHDAY for 10% off today only. As a disclaimer, you must be 21 or older. Some exclusions may apply. And as a personal disclaimer, this ad is not in any way me wishing Michael Knowles a happy birthday, which I certainly do not. Now let's get to our daily cancellation. So last week while I was out, I missed what may well prove to be the most cancel-worthy event of the year. I have no choice but to circle back around to it. As much as you might prefer that we leave it in the past and pretend it never happened, I'm referring, of course, to the new single from our old friend Dylan Mulvaney. And as you may or may not have heard, the trans-identified influencer has now turned his Days of Girlhood routine into a pop song. Mulvaney has made a mockery of women on every platform and through every medium available to him, but he hasn't yet until this past week done it through a pop song. And now he's finally corrected that oversight. The song, also called Days of Girlhood, was released along with the music video late last week. The video has exactly the sort of grotesque, weirdly dystopian aesthetic that you have come to expect. But in terms of sheer awfulness, nothing can match the lyrics, which are downright abysmal on about five different levels, except maybe the performance, which is weapons-grade cringe. All in all, there's a lot for Dylan to be embarrassed about, if only he was capable of such a self-aware emotion, which he isn't. With all that said, here it is. All right, let's cut it there. I was going to do a minute. It was going to be 1 minute, but it already felt like several thousand years. So I just can't. I can't continue. And it's pure suffering watching that. And we suffer as we watch it because, first of all, on a musical level, it is a very bad song. I mean, putting aside all the other issues that we'll discuss in a moment, the song itself is horrifically, almost sickeningly bad. Basically the musical equivalent of leprosy. But at the same time, while being aggressively obnoxious, it also manages to be bland and dull and boring and, of course, totally derivative. It's the worst of all worlds. It's both loud and lifeless. Even as it stands out for being so dreadfully awful, it still feels like you've heard it a million times. So you get the same feeling of deja vu that you get from a recurring nightmare. Not my favorite song, in other words. As to the content, we notice a few things. First of all, once again, we should note the term girlhood here as opposed to womanhood. It's bad enough that a man tries to become a woman. Mulvaney, on the other hand, is trying to be a teenage girl. He's 27 years old, yet his whole persona tries to capture some kind of bizarre, deluded, funhouse mirror impression of a 16-year-old girl. It's always creepy when a man tries to wear the skin of a woman like Leatherface, but Mulvaney goes from creepy to full-on horror show as he tries desperately to imitate a kid in grade school. So if we're going with movie analogies here, it might be more accurate to say that Dylan Mulvaney is Buffalo Bill meets Billy Madison. And second, as always, we see that trans-identified males reduce women to cartoonish degrading stereotypes. Consider the lyrics. We cut it off so you didn't hear all of them, but Monday, can't get out of bed. Tuesday morning, pick up meds. Wednesday, retail therapy. Cash or credit, I say yes. Thursday, had a walk of shame. Didn't even know his name. Weekends are for kissing friends. Friday night, I'll overspend. Saturday, we flirt for drinks, playing Wingman to our twinks. Sunday, the Twilight soundtrack cues my breakdown in the bath. That is Mulvaney's idea of womanhood, or girlhood in this case, summarized. It's his answer to the what is a woman question. What is a woman? Well, she's someone who lays around in bed all day, takes copious amounts of prescription drugs, is materialistic, sleeps around with men whose name she doesn't know, spends more than she can afford, throws herself at men for the sake of getting free drinks, and then sobs uncontrollably in the bathtub while listening to the Twilight soundtrack. This is what Dylan Mulvaney thinks of women. And it's far more cynical, demeaning, and insulting than anything you'll ever hear from like a red pill guy. It's also totally divorced from reality. My wife is an actual woman, and not one line from that song describes her. It doesn't describe any self-respecting adult woman, although it may bear some resemblance to the ones who aren't self-respecting. But that's because Dylan Mulvaney wrote the song based on his own experiences, not the experiences of a woman. He hasn't had the experiences of a woman because he's not a woman. No, Mulvaney is a gay man. And that's what the song is really about. These are the days of being a psychologically stunted and pathologically immature gay man. That's Mulvaney's actual experience, which he rips out of its proper context and tries to paste onto what he describes as girlhood. So if what he is describing is anything, it's not girlhood, it's gayhood. That is what Mulvaney is describing. Finally, if you can get past the sheer horror of the visuals in the music video, they do prove to be instructive, just not in the way that Mulvaney intends. Mulvaney does not look anything like a woman in any context, no matter how much makeup and airbrushing he does, no matter how creative he is with the camera angles. But this fact becomes even more strikingly obvious when you see the immediate contrast between him and actual women. In the music video, we see him dancing alongside actual women, and we'll pull up one random freeze frame here. And now imagine that someone, you know, was living alone in a cave for the past 30 years. Okay, imagine that we pulled him out of the cave, which would be a very cruel thing to do, considering that he's probably a lot happier down there than he'll be out here. But let's say we pulled him out and we show him this screenshot. We give him no context. We don't tell him anything about trans or anything else. We just show him the screenshot and we ask him if he notices anything unusual. Well, we all know that it would take the caveman less than half a second to point to Dylan Mulvaney and say, okay, that's a dude, right? Like one of these things is not like the other. And we all know who the black sheep is in this group. Because those other women look like women. They are women. Their womanhood is immediately obvious. Dylan Mulvaney, on the other hand, looks like a man in a wig with an eating disorder. Because that's what he is. He could take a lot of prescription drugs. He can go shopping. He can spend too much money. He can sleep with random men who are all gay men, by the way, that he's sleeping with. And he can even cry in the bathtub while listening to the Twilight soundtrack. But he'll never be a woman. He will never even have the physical shape of a woman. He can't fill the outline, much less can he inhabit womanhood at its deeper levels. That's the reality he can never escape. Because none of us can escape reality. It is what it is, no matter how we feel about it. And that is why Dylan Mulvaney is today, I'm assuming not for the first time, canceled. That'll do it for the show today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Godspeed.
This episode is brought to you by Paycor, the HR and payroll software made for leaders. It's never been harder to recruit, hire, and engage workers. That's why HR leaders and frontline managers depend on Paycor for all things people management, from onboarding and performance reviews to compensation and benefits. Learn more at paycor.com/leaders. That's PAYCOR.com/leaders.